It's time to reveal my crypto bull run prediction. Are we still in a bear market? When will the next big crypto bull run truly start? In today's episode of Crypto Over Coffee, I'm going to walk you through three key indicators that I'm looking at to determine when a crypto bull run is back online, as well as some other key information that you need to know. So grab yourself a coffee, hit the subscribe button, and stick around for all of the awesome details we've got in the episode today. And it is 9:30, so I'm drinking beer instead of coffee today. But you know my feelings on predicting the crypto markets. It's one of the most unpredictable spaces there is, and it's an imprecise exercise to predict anything. But there are a few key indicators that I'll be watching for that will give me confidence that the crypto bull run is back on track. Now, the third one of these indicators is the most specific and eerily accurate throughout history, so make sure you stick around for that one. But the very first indicator is one that's really easy to get distracted from when specific sectors of crypto are blowing up, like meme coins have been recently. But it's the most fundamental and important aspects of a sustained, holistic crypto market bull run. And that is the total market capitalization of crypto. And this is a measure of the total capital invested in crypto markets overall, and it's a metric that's both hard to calculate with exacting precision and yet still a major indicator of the health of the market. So to sustain a long-term bull market with all-time high price discovery, you're going to have to see capital inflow to cryptocurrency that drives that total market cap higher. In a bear market, you're going to see the opposite. These trends often sustain over a period of months, so even those who are more conservative can identify them as they're unfolding. For example, in the wake of the Celsius and Voyager and FTX collapses throughout the end of 2021 and into 2022, the market cap for crypto fell from over $2 trillion to $800 billion in a matter of 2.5 months, and then sustained that market cap sideways well into 2023. In fact, the peak for crypto in November 2021 was marked by an insane $3 trillion market cap that fell in early 2022 to nearly half that value. And in all these examples, these were signals that we were in a market phase by looking at trends in market cap. And in the run-up to a bull market, I would expect to see a steep positive slope in total market capitalization of crypto, indicating more capital flowing into the markets to meet supply and demand and drive prices up, or to meet supply with demand. Historically speaking, which is a whole other topic I'm going to touch on in a little bit, you'll see these steep increases in capital inflow to markets for a bull market on the back of big narratives and innovations that were built during long, boring, sideways, stagnant periods, like the bear market, the phase that we're in now. And that's what I think, by the way. But what drivers feed total market capitalization of crypto? One of the key drivers of market capitalization in crypto and other risk asset markets is global liquidity. The second indicator, which in general terms is a measure of the availability, ease, and flow of credit and capital in global financial markets. Global liquidity, while really hard to measure as well, is a major, major driver for financial market performance across the board. Reductively, when liquidity is strong, credit is easy to come by, markets thrive. And when liquidity is tight, markets get crunched. When central banks print money in times of quantitative easing, like we've had for the better part of the last decade, what these central banks are doing is pumping liquidity into the market, hence stimulating economic activity at the cost of inflation, among other things. During times of quantitative tightening, a la today, you see liquidity get drained globally to counteract the rampant inflation. And you see how this is a big seesaw game, one that central bank leaders are clearly losing control of, but that's another story for another day. In 2023, however, we've seen indirect reversals of quantitative tightening regimes. For example, the Bank of Japan's major yield curve control policy shift and subsequent liquidity operations by the ECB, Bank of Japan, and People's Bank of China, totaling around $1 trillion early in the year. The US Fed has also participated in this type of activity that adds liquidity to the banking system in a sort of a low-key way, both through reverse repo activities and in response to the banking crisis recently. And don't forget the whole UK bond sell-off debacle. Now, I'm simplifying a lot of this stuff because I could make a two-hour video just on these economic mechanisms. But the point that I'm making is that these somewhat opaque injections of liquidity in 2023 have surely helped risk asset markets like crypto and the stock market to trend positively. However, as liquidity tightens again, which I think it will, you could see volatility start to increase, markets to falter, etc. And this metric is hard to measure because of its complexity and the opacity of the financial system globally, but you can get just enough data by looking at US reverse repo charts and US Treasury general account charts, and then the same data sets for global central banks. Additionally, watching for hidden sources of liquidity deployment, like the examples we talked about today, can help. To sustain a crypto bull market, liquidity needs to be strong, or at least improve from where we are today. So I'll be watching this one very closely as well over the next several months and into next year. But if you look back at crypto and their bull runs and bear markets in recent years, it followed that trend of global liquidity very, very closely. And years of free capital and quantitative easing drove markets sky high, and then the bottom fell out when policy shifted and liquidity started to drain. So it's a really interesting one. However, want to get to the third one here. Global liquidity and market cap are higher level metrics and ones that aren't always easy to predict or measure accurately. So how can we get more granular in predicting what might happen in the market next? There's one particular metric that I've used a lot over the years that has a really good track record of predicting Bitcoin's moves. And Bitcoin drives a lot of the altcoin market as well. The Bitcoin market value to realized value ratio, or MVRV for short, is a measure of whether a given asset is above or below fair value. Effectively, it's a nice indicator for what proportion of Bitcoin in circulation is held at a profit and to what degree. And it's traditionally been pretty good at pointing to where we are in a given market cycle. So to calculate this, you divide Bitcoin's current market capitalization by its realized capitalization, which is a measure of aggregate cost basis that values dormant Bitcoin with a lower weight than active Bitcoin units, helping to reduce the weight of lost or irretrievable coins in calculating its value. This indicator is something you can find on Santiment, Glassnode, blockchain.com, etc., and reading it, it's pretty straightforward. The higher the number, the larger the unrealized profitability of Bitcoin holders, and subsequently higher probability that selling might occur to capture that profit. The lower the number, the fewer holders that are in position of unrealized profit, and further, holders are in a state or various states of unrealized losses. So a low MVRV value below one tends to indicate bear market's depths and can often serve as a predictor of bear market bottoms. High MVRV above 3.25 or so indicates high levels of profitability and generally have pointed to bull market tops. And again, these aren't perfect indicators, so don't look at this as a single isolated predictor. But still, it's really valuable as a contextual validator for trends in total market cap, global liquidity, and other metrics. So in early 2023, the Bitcoin MVRV ratio moved above 1.0 again, and has sustained that consistently since then, indicating that the bottom has likely been hit for Bitcoin, barring some major event out of our control or out of our foresight. The MVRV ratio ranging in the 1.1 to 1.5 range this year is indicative to me that this is the very beginning of a path to a renewed bull market, particularly if you factor in historical trends. As you see that ratio start to cross 2.0 and 3.0, you start to think we're in that bull market incline. When combined with other quantitative measures, which I've talked about in previous videos, you can start to predict where things might go. However, I would caution you in taking these measures as gospel and getting locked into these confirmation bias loops, because it's really easy to do. You want a bull market. I want a bull market. We want to see the signals that one's coming. So you just need to be careful of that. The historical trends are eventually going to get broken. And in truth, Bitcoin and crypto has never existed in a time of true economic collapse, nor aggressive monetary policy shifts like we've seen now. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone in 6 months or a year. So please be very careful. Take each day as an opportunity to reject your previously held beliefs as to what's going to happen with crypto or any risk asset for that matter. And you're probably thinking, hey, but wait, Hashoshi, the Bitcoin halving is coming. Limited supply, bruh. Scarcity, bruh. The four-year cycle. Oh my God. Everyone loves to throw around this whole guaranteed bull run four-year cycle thing whenever Bitcoin's distribution gets cut in half. And that's what history's shown. I get it. However, the Bitcoin halving only affects one side of the supply and demand curve, right? It constricts the circulating supply by limiting new Bitcoin available on the market through mining operations. However, if holders are selling or demand isn't sustained or increasing, the price still drops, right? Supply scarcity also needs demand to result in value increase. So we can't guarantee that in the future. We can postulate, but we can't guarantee it. And a global recession doesn't bode well for the demand side of Bitcoin, in my opinion, despite the proponents of the whole capital flight to Bitcoin and financial crisis theory. My current prediction, as I wait for these indicators and others to flash, is that we see crypto prices trend downwards, then stabilize and sideways through 2023, with a few rallies here and there, of course, and people will call it a bull market. But then in 2024, we might see some volatility until late in the year, and then things will start to pick up. My view is that the next large-scale bull market will begin in the late 2024 timeframe, with highs being printed in 2025. The wild card here is the global economic state of play. A deep recession can dramatically extend this timeframe, because I'm not a person who subscribes to the idea that a bull market with a blow off the top high is going to happen in a recession where capital's tight. That's fantasy land. So don't buy into a market based on blind faith in some guaranteed cycle, because the only approach, or the only thing guaranteed in that approach, is going to be a loss. So speaking of losses, though, there are many ways to lose money in crypto. Chief among them would be the ever-accelerating trend of wallet exploits and hacks that see crypto investors, both new and experienced, lose pretty much everything from their hot wallet in a matter of minutes. So how can you protect yourself from that? Drink a beer. There are two major things that you have to do to protect yourself and your assets in crypto. First, you have to follow good OPSEC practices. And second, you need to be armed with the right tools to help you identify and counteract exploits if they're happening. In terms of OPSEC, I've done tons of content on that, so I'm not going to dive deep there today. However, on the second one, there are now lots of cool tools out there to help crypto users with monitoring their wallets, avoiding scams, and help you practice good OPSEC, to be honest. And two of these I've used and I really think are valuable for the average crypto user. And I'll link both of these in the description if you want to try them out. The first of those is WalletGuard, and it's a browser extension that offers a ton of features to help you avoid crypto scams online, avoid transaction signing events that cause fund loss, and more. Two of the best features it has, in my opinion, are transaction simulation and URL scanning. So the URL scanning piece automatically flags known phishing and clone sites that are designed to steal funds from you, which inevitably will save people who go to Uniswap or try and go to Uniswap from Google and end up on a phishing site. That's a big value add. The other feature that's even more important is something that every person should be doing with every transaction they do, at least those with any major value, and that is transaction simulation. And what transaction simulation allows you to do is to get a general idea of the results of a transaction before you sign it and submit it. And this is a critical step in avoiding signing a transaction that's destined to fail and waste your money on fees, but can also help you avoid exploitation or malicious transactions and contracts. So WalletGuard makes this really easy, and it's not going to save you from every exploit because you might lose a seed phrase or expose a wallet. So you need something to help you react in the worst case that a wallet is compromised and you do fall into that trap. And this is where Webacy comes in, that second tool. Webacy offers a suite of tools in their DApp, or decentralized application, which just got released in version 3.0, by the way. And in this app, users can evaluate their wallet's risk score, so the risk of exploit, monitor wallet activity in real time, and set automated actions to recover assets from lost or compromised wallets. So Webacy's suite of tools is like Simply Safe home security for your crypto wallet. It's really easy to set up, it's modular, it's flexible. You can monitor your crypto wallets and set automated actions to help recover or protect assets in case of some type of issue. So the Wallet Watch tool is one of the tools available, and it's free to use if you want to get started with Webacy, and it allows you to get alerts for incoming, outgoing transactions, contract calls, etc. You can get those in SMS or text or email, so you know what's happening with your wallets at all times. And quick identification of a wallet compromise can be the difference between total loss and partial recovery. So again, you can try Wallet Watch using the link in the description, which is an affiliate link just for transparency, but I've just used it for a while now, and I think it's well worth it for your hot wallet if you use it day to day. Now, if we shift gears, I want to talk about a really interesting Uniswap governance proposal that might be very appealing to UNI token holders and also ignite a little bit of a regulatory debate, given Uniswap's general pattern of catering to both retail and institutional users. The community proposal would introduce a fee economy on a large proportion of the multi-billion dollars worth of Uniswap V2 and V3 liquidity pools. This move would route fees for usage of Uniswap liquidity pools to both project treasuries and UNI token holders through profit share. And this type of proposal has been shopped before, and it's failed due to controversy around tax implications and regulatory implications and worries about the affordability of fees. But through the course of this proposal's refinement, I'll be looking to see the specific math behind the fees proposed, the effect it might have on the economics of the protocol today, and how those fees would be distributed or allocated to treasuries, UNI holders, and how they'll be used after distribution to the treasury. So there's lots up in the air here. It's really just an idea. But for the biggest and most utilized DeFi protocol to be making this type of move during a bear market is pretty significant if it passes community vote. And that's a big if. Now, my friends, it's also time for 404 Logic Not Found, a firecracker of a segment on the show where we bring attention to illogical happenings in the crypto space. And if you want to help this show get some attention, please hit the like button, get subscribed, follow the podcast, share with your friends. Whatever you can do really helps, and it's much appreciated. This is probably one of the easiest 404 segments I've ever had to write, because the content pretty much wrote itself. Just recently, during a congressional hearing, one of crypto's predominant public enemies, Rep. Brad Sherman, gave us one of the greatest memes of 2023 so far with this epic statement.
Crypto bros make money literally by making money, and they've made over $1 trillion out of thin air. They'll accuse the U.S. government of making money out of thin air. Maybe we do, but we're the U.S. government.
And I must say, a moment of silence. He just said the quietest of quiet parts out loud with a big old smile, and that's that the U.S. government, or really any other government for that matter, can print intrinsically worthless money with impunity. But if you create an asset that doesn't have intrinsic value and it gets bought up for tons of money, you're rebel scum. Now, this is all said in a sort of joking manner, but it has serious connotations. We live in a world today where your financial situation, your family's financial situation and stability, as well as mine, lies in the hands of politicians and unelected officials whom I would optimistically say only partially care about your and my well-being. And that's being generous, really, because it appears often based on action that world governments do not, in fact, care one bit about their constituency, but I digress. What Mr. Sherman and many, if not most, of his congressional colleagues seem to forget is that they are called public servants for a reason. They work for us, not the other way around. And that power dynamic has been, in many ways, irrevocably reversed in many places around the world. When you're meant to serve the public, it's an absence of logic to sardonically joke about the privilege of government to create value out of thin air, whilst casting any private sector individual or company as evil for doing the same. I'm very centrist, in many ways libertarian, and it's a very, desperate place these days to be that way, because the inertia of global politics seems to be trending intractably towards these polar factions with no hope for compromise. And I really hope that trend reverses for everyone's sake. We all have much more in common than the media and the social media machine would lead you to believe. In other news, fans of Cardano will be excited to hear that the hotly anticipated Hydra Layer 2 framework was just released into mainnet for the first time. Hydra, which has been part of Cardano's lore and roadmap for years now, is an isomorphic state channel scaling solution that effectively creates one-to-many mini Cardano chains in the form of channels to process an increasingly large set of transactions at reasonable cost and scale. Like other Layer 2 protocols, of course, Hydra derives its security from the main Cardano blockchain, the Layer 1, and then it delegates the everyday volume to channels that emulate the ledger and execution environment of the Cardano network, so users can conduct basically any type of transaction just like they would on the Layer 1. The excitement about this is definitely warranted, okay? Because it's going to serve as a really important enabler for those building on Cardano, alleviating a lot of the concerns around Layer 1 scalability, though batching can already help with that to an extent if it's used properly. What I will say is that there's a lot of hyperbole about how big this update actually is, so I want to quell some expectations. A while back, there was a story that made the rounds about how Hydra can handle millions of transactions per second, this ridiculous number that's still being circulated today. My friends, that is nonsense, okay? It's one thing to take a theoretical number from the lab or the dev environment in ideal conditions and small payloads, and a totally different thing to estimate transactions per second in the real world where all kinds of variables and things are different and unpredictable. You don't even need a million transactions per second to be successful, really. You probably need 2,000 or 3,000 to really cover pretty much every use case you need to. With Hydra, This is the beginning of the journey. And the most important thing for Cardano to do right now is to go full bore on creating dev tools, turning governance over to the community, and teaching developers how to make the most of Cardano's design principles, rather than trying to copy Ethereum virtual machine models that have been done before. The last thing on Cardano, though, in this case, because I am excited about Hydra and I want to see what gets built there. But in my Crypto Over Coffee newsletter this past week, I shared some alpha on a free NFT mint on Cardano for a yet to be announced project. And I can't share, and I don't really know any other details besides that. But if you want to subscribe to my weekly crypto newsletter and get more info about that free mint and get the latest updates on Project Alpha I find, you can find the link in the description of the podcast. Now, another project that people should be keeping an eye out for is Threshold Network, a decentralized protocol for wrapped BTC that offers an alternative to the controversial WBTC for those who wish to use Bitcoin in DeFi and on many different chains. Threshold Network is a network that offers a mechanism by which users can mint one-to-one tokenized Bitcoin without trusting a single custodial entity to do the wrapping like you would with WBTC. This TBTC is minted on-chain and doesn't rely on a custodian, but rather cryptographic proofs to verify the receipt of Bitcoin on the Bitcoin network and a holding address before minting the corresponding amount of TBTC on the destination chain, say Ethereum. Recently, the process of moving this TBTC to different chains to bring Bitcoin liquidity to DeFi protocols just got easier with an integration and incentive program through Wormhole Bridge. This cross-chain bridge program is going to allow users to move their TBTC freely between a variety of blockchains supported by Wormhole, such as Ethereum and its layer 2s. Now, the term trustless has often bothered me in the context of bridges because you have to trust relayers or oracles or code, but this method exposes you to far less custodial risk than the alternative. That said, make sure you understand the risks of using bridges in any form of wrapping protocol, trustless or not, before using them with your precious Bitcoin. That's just something you should always do. And if you're curious about what makes Bitcoin so precious and valuable, as well as to understand the case for making it to the prized $100,000 BTC mark, follow the link in the description to check out a YouTube video that I did that dives into the economics of Bitcoin that you need to understand if you are a Bitcoin fan. That is going to do it for the show today. Thanks for tuning in, and I will see you on the next episode. Much appreciated. Cheers.